252 DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The White House confirming the military shot down a high-altitude object over the waters of Alaska.
What is concerning is that it was yet another unidentified object violating U.S. sovereignty by coming into our airspace, coming over our waters.
Republican Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski praising the quick action but admitting she's worried. Russia's launched a massive rocket attack on Ukraine, targeting Ukraine's power supply. Monday's earthquake in Turkey and Syria has now claimed more than 23,000 lives. Former President Trump's legal team has turned over to the FBI a file marked classified that was found at Mar-a-Lago. They also gave agents a laptop belonging to a current aide to Mr. Trump, where a copy of the file was found. This is ABC News. The NTSB says last month's near miss at New York's JFK Airport was caused by an American Airlines Boeing 77, which crossed a runway without clearance. It narrowly missed a Delta Airlines plane taking off. But the American Airlines pilots are refusing to talk to the investigators.
The conflict is around audio recording. The NTSB says the American Airlines Boeing 777 flight crew is refusing to be interviewed by investigators because the interview would be audio recorded. The pilots union says it has registered concerns with the NTSB's recent insistence on electronically recording interviews during investigations rather than investigators taking notes. But the NTSB says recording interviews is a long-standing practice to ensure accuracy and completeness. The NTSB says it has tried three times to interview the American Airlines flight crew. Alex Stone, ABC News.
Still hoping to snag a ticket to the Super Bowl, StubHub says you can get them, but you will pay at least $3,000. Daria Albinger, ABC News.
You are never far away from your favorite local radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app, and we invite you to get social with us by following our network's Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages. Want even more? CivicMedia.us.
You've got questions about navigating the healthcare system? Kristen Lyerly helps us find answers and discusses other issues at the intersection of healthcare and politics. Hometown Health, Thursday mornings at 7:30 on Up North News Radio.
We have a full hour with Milwaukee County Executive David Crowley.
Yes, thank you for having me. So glad to be in studio.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
You know, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, whether you are a union member or a business owner, picking up your garbage has no partisan lines. Making sure people can get to and from work shouldn't have partisan lines.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, always on the Civic Media app.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. I also reminded of Gina Beauclair.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
I also reminded of Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Is there anyone who is not happy about this or is pro bottle, anti can?
If you're hearing one thing from this whole thing, let it be that you should not drink your beer out of the package that it comes in. The opening in each of these vessels, right? A cup versus a bottle versus a can. Those two are very small. Aroma is a huge part of flavor. And if you really want to experience the beer, sometimes maybe you don't. Maybe you don't. So maybe those beers you can drink out of a can or a bottle.
My mind just went to, it's a lot easier to shotgun a beer than snorkel a bottle.
That is a great point. That's a great
just
point.
Just saying.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour. Thank you for joining us on your lunch hour, no matter where you're joining us, on the radio, the stream, the app, or maybe even a podcast later. Thank you for spending part of your Friday with us. Well, we want to jump right into our next topic to kick off the hour because this is a concerning, well, it's weird because it feels conflated as far as what this new report from Wisconsin Policy Forum report found, or from Wisconsin Policy Forum found in a new report. That more young adult lives are being lost in Wisconsin, even as death rates go down for older adults. And so to talk a little bit more about this and explain these findings and the ramifications of them is Mark Sommerhauser. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Hey, Kristen, thank you so much for having me.
So this feels... in some ways, it feels like a good thing because you want to think when there's new developments in medical treatment and prevention for heart disease and cancer and some of the illnesses and diseases that cut people's lives short, but in their later years is getting better. But it's pretty concerning to think that people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, their lives are getting cut short. And so I guess to start off, before we get into the details, what was the interest in looking at this as a trend?
Yeah. So I guess I would just say to start, you know, what you kind of laid out in your intro was very similar to the reaction we had, which was like, it's a little hard to know how to feel about this because there's a couple of pretty big trends happening here. And one of them's really encouraging and one of them's really concerning. So we kind of started this. We had a concept that we might want to do some research relating potentially to drug overdose deaths. But, you know, initially we weren't totally sure what that would look like. And as we often do in our research process, we were just kind of batting ideas back and forth. And we decided to kind of actually zoom out a little bit and look at what we call all-cause mortality, which is just, you know, essentially all types of deaths for all types of causes lumped together. And when we kind of zoomed out and did that kind of 30,000 foot view, that's when we kind of were able to see in the data some of what became kind of the, you know, the basis for this report, which is that, you know, we're seeing, you know, at the all cause level, you know, significantly lower rates of death for older adults in Wisconsin and nationally. But then unfortunately, you know, when we look at younger adults and we're defining that, there's of course different ways you could define that. We're defining that in the report here as ages 25 to 44. We did see, you know, significant increases in mortality. And I should just specify for your listeners here, we did look at the data kind of over a long-term period, so a two-decade time period from 2001 to 2021. Obviously, you know, COVID-19 has created some of its own trends here just within the last few years that people are going to be aware of. But we kind of wanted to get a big picture view for this report. So we were kind of looking over that two-decade time frame.
And so let's start with the older population as far as the fact that despite, because I think conventional wisdom would have, at least to me, said COVID-19 disproportionately harmed, impacted older generations. And yet,
correct,
even that is true, but not to the not to offset the improvements we've made with the more typical heart disease, cancer. Exactly. And so tell me more about how that, did that surprise you?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I knew we were making progress in some of these areas, but it's always like anything else. It's until you pull up the data and you look at the numbers that it starts to come into focus for you. If you look at all-cause mortality for folks in their 60s, 70s, 80s, both in Wisconsin and nationally, you see a very steady, you know, downward trajectory in total all-cause mortality, starting in 01, going right up through 2019. And then unfortunately, COVID-19 comes along and it does tick up quite significantly. But as you just laid out there, not by enough to offset all of, you know, the declines in mortality that we had seen from essentially from 2001 to 2019. And we really found that there's three kind of main causes for this. And that is that when you look at three of the most common causes of death, particularly for older adults, that being heart disease, cancer, and cerebrovascular illness, which primarily is going to be strokes. Mm-hmm. You know, there have just been, over the last two decades, tremendous progress, tremendous declines in mortality from those causes, anywhere from 24% decline for cancer to 45% decline in mortality for cerebrovascular diseases, primarily strokes, over the last two decades. So that's just staggering. I mean, it's incredible. Go ahead.
No, it's, yeah. I mean, I'm just commenting. Yeah. And is, so, I mean, 45% is a huge number.
It's massive. It's massive. And, you know, so, and again, these are three of the most common causes of death. I should say, too, that, you know, we were just, for all of our data analysis here, we were relying on data from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. They have a public accessible database called WONDER that is basically the master database nationally for all 50 states. It uses just data from death certificates that are filed in each of the 50 states, and it enables us to look at trends in mortality, you know, here in Wisconsin, nationally, according to all sorts of demographic and other factors. So it's an incredibly useful tool for this kind of analysis.
We're talking to Mark. Oh, I was just going to reintroduce you. We're talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who's the communications director and policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum, on his new report, More Young Adult Lives Lost in Wisconsin, Even as Death Rates Down for Older Adults. And so is there anything more you want to add to the trend that we saw with older adults?
I think those are the key points. I mean, it's just the one other thing, I guess, to just kind of piggyback on what you were pointing out there about COVID. You know, obviously then we did see this uptick in 2020 and 21, which were of course the years when we were really seeing the very high levels of COVID mortality. But you know, it just underscores that had we not had a once in a century global pandemic, these declines in mortality among older adults would have been that much greater, which is pretty remarkable. And obviously, you know, we saw COVID mortality down quite a bit in 2022. Hopefully down even further again in 2023. And it does hold out hope that maybe we can kind of get back on that trajectory we were on in 2019 of continuing to make progress in those areas.
But on the contrast, specifically even just starting with COVID, and when you looked at mortality rates for 20s, 30s, 40s, or specifically you guys were looking at 25 to 44, correct?
Yeah. I mean, we looked at all different levels, but where we really saw where we really did see the biggest change was kind of in that 25 to 44.
And one of that mortality rates are actually going up. But one of the reasons, even though what was surprising, yes. if I'm understanding this from the report correctly, what was surprising in the assumption that COVID would have increased mortality because we thought, we were told that it's so disproportionately was dangerous for older people. It was also really dangerous for young people. And that's one of a couple reasons that the mortality rates have gone up for young people, right?
Correct. Yeah. And the one thing that probably is important to understand there is that it doesn't take as much to move the needle in all-cause mortality among younger adults because very few of them die. And so, you know, as opposed to older adults, there's much, much higher rates of mortality among older adults. So, you know, you add in something like COVID, which, you know, you're totally correct, did much more, you know, very disproportionately affect, in terms of mortality, very disproportionately affected older adults. But, you know, older adults are suffering from much higher rates of mortality for all, yeah. a whole host of causes. So, whereas younger adults, you know, there are a few, you know, more frequent causes of death among younger adults, but just the baseline is so much lower for them that you introduce something like COVID and it will, on a percentage basis, it will move the needle a little bit more. And that's kind of what we saw. You know, that being said, and we'll obviously talk about this in a minute, but COVID definitely was a very much a secondary factor, with the far bigger one being drug overdose deaths.
And so we'll get into a little bit deeper when we come back from the next commercial, but just to set up, what were the other factors that have led to increased mortality rates for younger folks?
Yeah, the main ones are drug overdose and COVID deaths. We did see also a slight uptick in the suicide death rate as well. So that's another contributing factor. But really, you know, way, you know, the vast majority of this increase really has come from drug overdose deaths. In the last couple years, there was also a little bit of a contributing factor as well from homicide deaths. Of course, we have seen in Wisconsin and nationally, unfortunately, since about the summer of 2020, you know, an uptick in homicide, an uptick in violent crime. That, of course, disproportionately is going to affect younger adults. Most frequently are the victims of homicide. So, again, that was a much smaller contributor. But really, the two main ones are the ones that we kind of highlight, overdose deaths and COVID.
All right. Well, we'll get into that a little bit more as far as how that how Wisconsin differs or is in step with trends nationally, and also what this means as a bigger picture and ramifications of these trends. But our guest this half hour is Mark Sommerhauser, who is a communications director and a policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum. We'll be back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
I'm in the lab all alone, even the postdoc went home. Why won't this DNA clone? I'm in the lab to get data. We're up all night to write code. We're up all night to brainstorm.
It makes me smile, and you have a piano, but if you play the Peanuts theme song.
Oh, my gosh.
You know he can.
Yes.
On the Devil's Radio.
Yes. Yeah. I love it. Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
I grew up hearing that women are bad with money, but I pay bills and take care of my family, so I'm pretty good with money. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. Jumpstart your retirement savings at WeSaySaveIt.org. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Thank you for listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Now join us anytime by finding and following our Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram pages. You'll also find social media links for your favorite shows and hosts on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. Lows level off around 17 overnight under clear skies. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Daytime highs approaching 42 tomorrow. Sunny skies. Clear skies again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 24. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Sunday, decreasing clouds by Monday. Highs in the low 40s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 17.
A fresh approach to finding common ground in the Fox Valley. This is Civic Media.
Civic Media.
As you know, I'm all about the data, mo data. 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 Here, it's pretty clear.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Got Jane Matinere with the another great find of parody songs. And we are talking to Mark Sommerhauser, who is the communications director and a policy researcher for Wisconsin Policy Forum. And we're talking about his newest report, finding that more young adult lives are lost in Wisconsin, even as death rates are going down for older adults. And the previous segment, we talked about some of the reasons why, but I guess how much is this, do we fall in line with national trends, or how much are we either behind or ahead of national trends?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's always something that we're trying to be mindful of. There are a lot of trends that we can look at where you can say, oh, you know, X is increasing or decreasing in Wisconsin. But then we kind of look at the national data and we go, okay, this is really just kind of a national trend. And Wisconsin is just sort of riding that larger wave that is playing out throughout the country. To some extent, that is what is happening here. I would say to a large extent it is. We are seeing, you know, the broad strokes of this happening nationally on both sides in terms of mortality declining for older adults, increasing for younger adults. But it is also true that when we look at the trends among young adults, mortality has increased during the period we looked at, which again, you know, was this two-decade period from 2001 through 2021, 2021 being the most recent year for which we have data from the CDC. We do see a sharper increase here in Wisconsin in all-cause mortality among younger adults in that 25 to 44 age cohort. So that is, you know, certainly a little bit of additional cause for concern, and in particular in the area of the drug overdose fatalities. Mm-hmm. We see a much sharper increase in overdose fatalities among adults ages 25 to 44 in Wisconsin than nationally. Now, some of that, you always have to keep in mind your baseline. Two decades ago, Wisconsin had a much lower overdose fatality rate for individuals in those age groups than the nation. So we, in a lot of ways, have more kind of regressed to the mean. We've kind of become more like the nation and gotten actually quite close now to the national overdose fatality rate among those age groups. So whereas two decades ago we were doing much better than nationally in that area, now we've kind of just fallen in line pretty close to where the nation is at. And of course, as most of your listeners are probably familiar, over the last two decades is when we've really just seen the explosion of this opioid overdose crisis play out. And it's really, you know, kind of morphed and evolved from initially being something that was rooted more in prescription medication, right, that people would take for pain, potentially develop addictions and start taking more of this medication and potentially overdose. Now, in the last few years, it's a totally different crisis, and it's become something that's really mostly about fentanyl, which is a synthetic opioid, a manufactured opioid that is incredibly potent, that is unfortunately now more and more often being laced into other drugs. So people will buy some sort of a drug, a street drug, or some sort of a prescription medication that they'll purchase. They'll think that they're buying one type of drug. Unbeknownst to them, it may be laced with fentanyl. And again, this is an incredibly potent drug, especially for people that have not ever consumed it. And it can result in overdoses. And that's unfortunately what we're seeing in increasing numbers nationally and here in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, that it feels like that so much comes back to that as far as what is happening, not only just in our metropolitan areas, but across the entire state as far as fentanyl being
yes.
such a big problem. And so I want to talk about solutions, even if there aren't any, or even solutions that at the forum you guys are interested in researching. But before we get to that, how much do these trends of older people living longer and younger people, the mortality rates going up, are they at numbers where it is exacerbating the already growing problem of an aging population and a dwindling working age population? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a reasonable question to. Yeah, no, I think that's a very reasonable question to ask. I mean, you know, obviously we emphasize in the report, and you understand as well. We all get that, you know, the biggest issue here is the human toll that's being taken. But I don't think the economic toll can be. Yeah, but I don't think the economic toll can be overlooked either, because as you mentioned, you know, our state is dealing with, you know, an aging population, which is, by the way, a regional issue. It's something that you see in most of the Midwestern states. And Wisconsin is no different in this respect. We're seeing an aging population, you know, people in the baby boomer, especially age cohort, retiring out of the workforce. In a lot of professions, there are just not enough people of working age, especially prime working years, which, you know, is exactly the age group essentially that we're talking about here, 25 to 44. That's, you know, really prime working years in just about any profession. You know, we need more people in that age cohort. And unfortunately, when you have this additional trend now of, you know, primarily overdose deaths, you know, killing more people in those age cohorts, it absolutely is having an impact. We looked at, for instance, you know, within this cohort, just to put some more concrete numbers to it for your listeners, ages 25 to 44, when we compare 2001 to 2021, 1,100 more deaths, a little more than 1,100 more deaths among people ages 25 to 44 in Wisconsin in 2021 compared to 2001. So, you know, and that's just for 1 year, right? So we've been seeing a steady increase year after year. And unfortunately, we, you know, may see a number in this ballpark in 2022. We don't have that data yet. But, you know, you see a pretty large number like that just for 1 year, and you stack that up year after year, and, you know, certainly over a decade or more, it can absolutely have a really large impact, I think, statewide.
Absolutely.
Well, so
unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to solutions, but the forum did write a report called Road to Recovery, specifically about Milwaukee County. I will put that in our show notes for today as maybe a glimmer of hope of some way. But Mark Sommerhauser, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, right. Thank you, Kristen. It's always good to be with you.
All right, great. We will be back in just a minute with J.R. Ratcliffe to talk about the Brett Favre timeline. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Fox Valley regional and state news and commentary for us to find common ground. Civic Media.
ABC News, I'm Daria Albinger. The White House confirming the military shot down a high-altitude object over the waters of Alaska.
What is concerning is that it was yet another unidentified object violating U.S. sovereignty by coming into our airspace, coming over our waters.
Republican Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski praising the quick action, but admitting she's worried. Russia's launched a massive rocket attack on Ukraine, targeting Ukraine's power supply. Monday's earthquake in Turkey and Syria has now claimed more than 23,000 lives. Former President Trump's legal team has turned over to the FBI a file marked classified that was found at Mar-a-Lago. They also gave agents a laptop belonging to a current aide to Mr. Trump, where a copy of the file was found. This is ABC News.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
I was about to get on the radio and be interviewed, and all of a sudden, I see something out of the corner of my eye move. It was a squirrel.
Oh, that's not good.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
I couldn't find the squirrel, but I knew it was somewhere in the house. I ended up naming him Albert. He was relocated to Brookfield, so he is now a suburban squirrel.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry, always on the Civic Media app.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM 98.3 FM Oshkosh Air Support.
Frog in a pot of boiling water and it'll jump right out. But put a frog in a pot of cool water and slowly heat it up, that frog will boil. As a metaphor for us and all that we go through as veterans, it's a story that rings true. We learn to endure the heat in silence. We apply what we learn to life, the bills, the job, the family, things we're expected to handle with ease. When life heats up around us, we just try to stay afloat. We let the water boil. Reaching out isn't easy, but you've never been interested in easy. You join because you are not afraid of hard work. You are not a frog. If you or a veteran you know needs support, don't wait until the water boils. Reach out. Find resources at va.gov/reach. That's va.gov/reach. Brought to you by the United States Department of Veterans Affairs and the Ad Council.
You know, I grew up hearing that women are bad with money. But like many of you, I spent years paying bills, managing checking accounts, and taking care of my family. So turns out women are pretty good with money after all. And now I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. It's never too late to start, and there's a great website to help you. Check out WeSaySaveIt.org and jumpstart your retirement savings on your budget and your timeline. That's WeSaySaveIt.org, brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Only life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute risk test today at DoIHavePrediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Thank you.
You're a douche, you're a douche, you're a big fizzy douche.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Jane Matinere, that was a bold, bold jump.
It's Friday.
It is Friday.
It's just got Friday kind of song.
Did you say that there's over a dozen songs about douches?
You would be amazed.
This was the best one?
It was the most upbeat I felt.
Well, I think we started off on a good start with our guest who is here to talk about a certain, I'm not going to call him that, but a certain ex-football player who played for the Packers. J.R. Radcliffe is coming back to the show. He is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter who captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And the timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in a welfare scam in Mississippi certainly falls under that. So welcome back, JR.
Hey, good to be here again. How are you guys?
I'm so glad that you're on the live stream at first, because I was going to give you crap about your Browns jersey that you're wearing.
Yeah. Yes, I'm not a Browns fan or anything, but this is a very special jersey. Hmm. This is Joe Thomas, newly elected, or I should say, elected is probably the wrong word, newly selected for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We found that out on Thursday night. He's going to be inducted into Canton on, I don't remember the date, but it's in August. And yes, Milwaukee's own Pro Football Hall of Famer. Very exciting.
That is exciting. But also, I'm happy that you were on the live stream so I could see your reaction to our intro song. Because I think it took you by the surprise. It
definitely caught me off guard. Did not expect that. Didn't know that there was that much content around. Also a word that I'm not fully comfortable saying out loud, but that... I'm glad we have it in song. That's perfect.
We do have it in song. So let's get started, because Jane actually sent this to me last night, your article that was published yesterday of the timeline of Brett Favre's involvement in this. And she was like, this is dense, but mm-hmm. it feels important. And so luckily, we've had you, the author of this, on the show before. So I was like, I'm just going to see if JR can come on and talk about it rather than me trying to do this justice, because... And you do give credit that this was a lot of reporting that came from Mississippi Today, from Anna exactly. Wolf. But how was it to kind of help like put this all together as far as explain this? Because it goes back to 2017.
Yeah, and it's something actually that's published a while ago. And I just keep updating it because there's plenty of new twists and turns. And the most recent coming yesterday when Brett Favre filed his own lawsuit, defamation lawsuit. But yeah, Anna Wolf, an independent organization, Mississippi Today, has done just an unbelievable job covering this. And there are lots of other organizations in there that are kind of synthesized into the timeline. But it was instructive for me just trying to figure out, okay, like I understand that there's, you know, there's fraud involved. I know Brett Favre isn't the only player here. And I was just trying to figure out, okay, well, how is he going to go to jail? Is he going to get sued? Is he, where are we with it? Did he just get caught up in something? You know, so I was trying to parse that out myself. And it takes some rereading even when there's something new. It's like, okay, now what was he getting sued for exactly? Who was exactly doing the suing? And you know, how culpable is he? That sort of thing. So that's what I was looking to do and started building that thing. And it, you know, like it resurfaces every few weeks when there's some new development in the whole thing.
And so for now, reading this, what I understand is that he has not been criminally charged with anything. The ex-governor Correct. Has also not been criminally charged with anything. Who has Correct. Been criminally charged?
So there's a couple people. The former head of the Department of Human Services in the state of Mississippi is a guy by the name of John Davis. He was in charge. And to kind of just set it up, this is the particular grant here is called TANF, TANF, Temporary Assistance for Needy Families. And it's federal money. It's a block grant that's given to every state. And then the state can decide how they want to disperse it. And Mississippi's decision, or the way they did it, is to distribute it to some nonprofits who theoretically are people who deal with those who are, you know, in need of assistance, and then let them handle it. There wasn't really any communication or documentation between John Davis and a woman by the name of Nancy New, who she and her son were heavily involved in one of these nonprofits. And both of them, by the way, have been arrested. They've had plea deals. Like they are major players. What Brett Favre's involvement, they're bigger players. You know, they've had money go elsewhere as well. It has nothing to do with Brett Favre. They're in big trouble. But Brett Favre met with them, both of them actually, in 2017 when he was looking to get funding pulled together for a volleyball facility at Southern Mississippi, his alma mater, where his daughter was playing volleyball. And that's where things really start to go wrong. And what Nancy New did that was as one of the more deceptive things here is that the TANF money cannot be used for brick and mortar operations. You know, they are specifically earmarked for families. So you can't just build a building with this money. That would be wrong. That would be counter to kind of the goal of the TANF grant. But what they did is they set it up like it was a lease and said, well, we're going to build, you know, we'll give you this money to build this building, Southern Mississippi, but we're going to treat it as a lease operation, not a here's money for construction so that, you know, we can use the building for needy families and have it, you know, be multi-purpose, multi-use. That's not really what happened with the building. The building was built for volleyball. Yeah. And so that was the biggest expenditure. The $5 million sent to Southern Mississippi ostensibly as a lease, but was actually for this building. That was one of the bigger chunks of money that was improperly used. But that's $5 million, not a $77 million. Like, this, there's a much broader, you know, fraud scheme here. The thing is, Brett Favre was kind of at the forefront of fundraising for that building and trying to kind of work his connections to get some money. And there's more than just that building. There's a, you know, biomedical startup, too, that gets in here as well. But basically, he was kind of nudging his buddies over and over and over for money, and they were willing to give it to him. And that ended up being, you know, being fraudulent, including some money that Favre has paid back, some things he's still getting sued for. But that was kind of the starting point back in 2017 where things started going wrong.
So then with because he hasn't been criminally charged, but there are lawsuits. So, like, what are some of the lawsuits that he is on the hook? I mean, I don't know. The lawsuits aren't settled, but as far as what legally has been proven so far as his involvement, even if it's in lawsuits, not criminal charges.
Yeah. Like you said, criminally, he's not right now on the hook, and neither is former Governor Bryant, who was kind of his kind of main contact there for a while. He's no longer governor of Mississippi. He did two terms, and that was all that you can do in Mississippi. So he just was replaced by another governor. And the state tried to recoup, first of all, $1.1 million that was paid to Favre for appearances, and he was going to record some, you know, some like health service public service announcements on the radio, make some speaking appearances. Those never happened. So there were a couple payments made to him worth $1.1 million. Initially, the state sued him to get that money back because they figured out that he didn't make those appearances. He didn't, you know, he kind of denied wrongdoing there. He did repay that money eventually. But now there's sort of, and there have been some amendments to this lawsuit as well. And there's a million different people that they're suing, including, you know, Favre, but then also like Favre Enterprises, and then his buddies with this startup group, and the school has gotten brought into this as well. But, you know, basically now it's sort of damages. Their position is that Brett Favre knew what he was doing, that he was pulling money, you know, requesting that money be pulled anyway from this fund that was earmarked for something else. And that, you know, that there was some wrongdoing there. You know, Favre's position is that there was no wrongdoing. He had no idea that that's where the money was coming from. He was consulting with old friends, but he had no idea that government money meant for something else was ever going to be used for his projects, which not everyone buys into that.
Yeah.
That is his position right now. And now I think we kind of, there's still a lot that could be developed. Like the Department of Justice could decide, yeah, actually, not only did that happen, but we actually can come up with some criminal charges for you. But that has not happened yet. And honestly, I'm not even sure if it will.
So then the update from yesterday, we're talking to J.R. Radcliffe, who is a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports reporter and captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And as of yesterday, he updated his timeline or the timeline of former Packer Brett Favre's involvement in this welfare scandal in Mississippi that now he is the one filing lawsuits.
Yeah.
And so tell us more about these defamation lawsuits that end if they have any legs.
He is coming after Shannon Sharpe, who is, of course, the brother of former Packers receiver and Favre's teammate Sterling Sharpe. He's on Undisputed every day with Skip Bayless and the Fox networks there. And he's coming after Pat McAfee, whom we know if for no other reason, because he hangs out with Aaron Rodgers on Tuesdays.
Aaron Rodgers, and the only guy who can get Aaron Rodgers to really bare his soul.
Open up. Yeah. Oh, man. The content. Oh, the content is so much. There's so much.
We could talk about his 4 days in darkness if we have time.
Both of those gentlemen are now in the crosshairs of a defamation lawsuit. They both, to some, you know, to paraphrase, both of them said to some degree that Favre stole money from poor people. Like, that was kind of how they framed it. And it wasn't, you know, I'm not a lawyer well enough to know like what the threshold is. Favre is a public figure, so it's a lot harder to prove, you know, sort of defamation, libel, anything like that. I don't know if you could specifically say Shannon Sharpe and Pat McAfee saying it cost him anything or what the deal is there. He didn't steal money directly from poor people. Like, that's not what happened. But ultimately, you know, you've got a lot of people coming down saying that he should have known better. He should have known that money was coming from somewhere and probably people who need it more than he does. So that's sort of the ethical, moral versus legal thing. The bigger interest to me was that he also filed suit against Shad White, who is the auditor for the state of Mississippi. And he's the guy basically in charge with finding all the figures and money and then turning it over to the Department of Justice to say, okay, do with it what you want. Initially, he said Favre was fine, that he behaved and did everything they asked him to do. In later interviews, not so much. He's sort of implying that there is some pretty moral grayness there that Brett Favre probably should have known better. So that's That's really interesting, all of it. And obviously McAfee and Sharp are pretty big names, so I'm sure that there'll be a lot of people following this.
Has Favre been having money problems that we're not aware of or something? It just doesn't sound like very much money, $5 million to build a, you know, a volleyball center. Why don't you pay for it yourself and put your name on it? What is with rich people? Jeez.
I completely agree. That is one of the takeaways here. Why? Presumably Brett Favre has a lot of money. And if you ask him to pay $5 million for a volleyball facility, you know, can he just go to the bank? I think what we've seen is the answer is no. Whether or not, whether he could, we don't know. Whether he decided that he had a way to pay for it without pulling it out of his own pockets, or he legitimately doesn't have that money in his pockets. Like, that's something you have to consider. He was very persistent with his friends in the government in high places. He even came to them after there was a lot of, some of the scandal had been revealed. Like, people were already getting, you know, in legal trouble, and he was still asking for more money, like, to finish off his volleyball facility. It was wild. So I think we have to assume either he doesn't have the money, or he just felt like he could pay for it through other means. And it was very important to him. He committed to it, found out maybe he couldn't do it or wanted to do it another way. And then, you know, things start snowballing from there.
Well, and it's interesting to go back a little bit as a, I mean, you are a journalist. I do opinion. So we are in different sides of the aisle. But I think going back to the, what's happening with the defamation suit, of what is the line in, because I feel like we're, these commentators in sports, whether it's Skip Bayless, like, they're kind of always stepping in it, but that's also kind of their job, because they're literally, it's not just reporting like what you do, it is adding color, adding opinion. And like, I think as we talked about it, I would have to go back and listen to the show of the, when you work an opinion, how much you can give your opinion about something that hasn't been legally found yet. And also the ramifications of it. I mostly also think of it, and this is a little bit of a sidestep, but as of this morning, I was just seeing that, you know, different commentators who've referred to Russell Westbrook as like a vampire, and his wife saying, you know, his wife posting this and being like, ESPN, this is sick. Like, my kids go to school and they have to talk to their kids about their dad, whether or not their dad's an actual vampire. And so do you feel, I mean, which is a little silly, but the kids are small, but you know, like, is there a responsibility on the side of commentators and opinion, even though there's a lot of time to fill? Like, regardless of legality, is there a point here that they shouldn't have been making those claims if there's no legal charges yet?
I mean, that's a great question. I think all of media doesn't have a great answer for that. It's challenging because it is a really nuanced situation. It's not obvious what's happening here. I mean, it seems pretty clear, I think, to a lot of people, but I'm guessing, you know, Pat McAfee, Shannon Sharp, and whomever have talked about it without having all the details, you know, and even, I mean, someone who's put together a big timeline. I don't have all the details. You know, I'm not there in Mississippi doing this reporting, which is very nuanced and has a lot of moving parts and things like that. So, Brett Favre's camp has denied all wrongdoing, are all wrongdoing. Like, he really feels like he did nothing wrong. So I guess he's a little burned by that.
All right. Well, JR will still be here when we come back, but we're going to switch gears to a different sport, different team, because Jay Crowder is coming home. So we're going to talk about that and maybe a little bit about TikToks. Hello? This is As Goes Wisconsin. Give me a D-O-U-C-H-C.
Drum roll.
You're a douche. I'm a douche.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Ty Christian from Lords of the Trident. Can you say Max Inc. Radio rocks, Jimmy K. is awesome in Japanese?
Sure. Let's see. How do I say rocks? Let me see. Sugoi! Max Inc. Radio, sugoi datta omoimasu. I just said you're great, you know.
Thank you. You're great too. Original local music from Wisconsin. It's Max Inc. Radio on Civic Media. Saturday night, 6 p.m. to midnight. We are local music.
I love this song.
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Lows level off around 17 overnight under clear skies. Winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Clear skies tomorrow. Highs level off around 42. Tomorrow night, lows around 24. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Sunday, decreasing clouds by Monday. Highs in the low 40s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on 98.3 FM and 1100 AM WISS. Right now, 17.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us.
You're my one horse town, Milwaukee, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Pry. We got Jane Matinair on the board, and we are talking to J.R. Radcliffe, who is a reporter at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and captures social stories and trending local sports topics. And moving on from Brett Favre, we have some exciting news about a certain Crowder, not to be confused with Trey Crowder, who is a Tennessee, like, redneck liberal comedian, but Jay Crowder, Marquette alum. We went head-to-head with him on the Phoenix Suns when we played them in the finals, and he was very good. I remember that series being like, I wish he wasn't so good. But now he's going to be a Buck, which is very exciting, right? This is good news.
Yeah, he was even better when the Miami Heat eliminated the Bucks from the playoffs the year before that. He played with Miami, so the Bucks are probably sick of seeing him. Now they're getting him. It's one of those transactions that, and I think this is actually kind of rare, where you've heard his name associated with the Bucks for months. Mm-hmm. He's been sitting out all season. He's been unhappy with his situation in Phoenix, and he'd been asking for a trade. And the Bucks were kind of a team that where he'd fit pretty nicely. They kind of need that sort of defender, sort of a 6'8" type defender who can do some of the things that he can do. And it just seemed like a natural match forever, but it took up until the final hours before the trade deadline before it actually happened. And he was actually traded from the Suns to the Nets and the Kevin Durant deal first. And it's not entirely clear when he'll be available, because he's been sitting out since last postseason. He hasn't been in any NBA game since then. So I assume there's going to be a little bit of an acclimation process, but like I said, fits what they need. He's kind of a missing piece. And of course, Bucks fans remember them adding PJ Tucker in for the 2021 home stretch and how valuable he was in the playoffs. And I think they're hoping to catch that lightning in a bottle once again.
And so explain a little bit further, because it's not that he's hurt, but why has he not been playing? Is it just because of a personality clash, or is it just because, and I would hope that even in those situations, he's still practicing. So it's not that he's totally cold, but like, What is the situation there that he just wouldn't have been playing despite being a good player?
Yeah, and not practicing. I'm sure he's working out. I'm sure he's keeping healthy and stuff. But that it's not 100% clear. Which is maybe if there is a small caution for Bucks fans, is kind of trying to unpack that a little bit. Lori Nichol did a great story at jsonline.com trying to sort of break that down. And you know, he said it's not about money, that he felt like it wasn't about his starting job, which kind of had disappeared in Phoenix. But there's definitely some animosity there with him and the coach. The coach is kind of like, I just got to move on. Monty Williams, who's by all other accounts is a really easy guy to get to work with. He's a pretty laid back, chill personality. And he just wasn't happy. And it's Phoenix is a good team. I mean, they could certainly, especially with Durant now, they're going to be one of the contenders for the championship once again, the Western mm-hmm. Conference. So it's not like, and I mean, Jay Crowder's not a star. He's a role player. And so it is curious, right? Like why would a role player not want to play with the Phoenix Suns? He was probably getting paid roughly what he's worth. His role was probably roughly what it should have been. He just didn't like it there. And he has bounced around a lot. He's played, I think, for 8 teams, 10 plus years. So, I mean, is he a malcontent? I think is the concern Bucks fans would have. Like, is he gonna not want to play here? What's his role here? The Bucks did get to meet with Crowder before they made this trade. That he was given permission to sort of talk things over. Presumably, that all got hashed out. That Okay. The Bucks are telling him exactly what his role is going to be, and he was happy by that. And you look at, you know, you look at his tweets. He's clearly very happy to be coming to Milwaukee. So something there was ironed out in advance, and that does, I think, lend a little bit of calm to sort of the unpredictability of it,
of the personalities. Mm-hmm.
Is there any concern or love loss as far as who we traded him for between Wara, Hill, or Ibaka?
I mean, I'd feel really bad for George Hill if he got traded away from a second championship Bucks team. That would be the second time that the Bucks have won a title and George Hill was traded during the season. So I feel bad for him, but ultimately they gave nothing that they were going to use in the playoffs, you know, to make it sort of a crude way of looking at it. But, you know, Jordan Wara, interesting, but wasn't really developing into anything more than just kind of a guy off the bench. George Hill, a veteran, he was having a really nice year, but he's still not somebody that you would have seen getting major rotation minutes in the postseason. Serge Ibaka was already unhappy with his role with the Bucks, had left the team. Everybody was kind of cool with that, but they were saying they will find a new spot for him, a new team. So no loss in terms of player rotation. They gave up 5 second round picks, which is a lot. Mm-hmm. But if you go back over the past decade and look at the best players in the NBA to come from the second round, you do have Nikola Jokic, who is a two-time MVP, could be third this year. That was back in 2014. I mean, that was a great hit. But those picks are like lottery tickets. The odds of that happening are so remote. As far as I know, Jokic, since 2014, again, there have been no All-Stars drafted in the second round of the NBA draft. It's not like the NFL draft or the Major League Baseball draft, for that matter, where second-round guys are still possibly franchise-changing players. That's definitely not what happens in the NBA. So it's not really – it's a high volume of things to give up. You know, 8 things total, but it ultimately I don't think is anything that's going to hurt them.
And then finally, totally different subject, but not sometimes. Right. So since my other job is at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, JR and I work together. But one of the new things that we are doing at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is some of the reporters who do the daily briefing newsletter are now also on TikTok. And JRs mm-hmm. are very good. So how are you liking making TikToks, JR?
I'm enjoying them quite a bit. I'm definitely a person who loves my phone, but I have not been on TikTok. And it's, I don't want to say I'm too old for it, but I'm probably, like, I'm not in the demo. So, you know, it's taking a little bit of, you're getting used to it, getting to know how to be good on TikTok, how to be funny on TikTok. I think with a lot of work, I maybe could get there, but you know, I'm not going to say that that I've integrated it into my life, but it's a little bit of a new frontier for me. And we're having a lot of fun. My colleagues, Bill Glauber and Sophie Carson as well, are doing a lot of great stuff. We do the newsletters five days a week, and then we do a 60-second TikTok that sort of summarizes what you see in the newsletter. And it's fun. It gives us a chance to show off our office a little bit and show off our personality a little bit. It's been really cool.
They've been great. So first I would say, if you're subscribed to the Daily Briefing, as far as that is one of my like 4 things that I read in my preparation for this show and is a great summation of the news of the day for Southeastern Wisconsin, but also Wisconsin as a whole. And so certainly get that. It pops in your inbox. I think it's 7 a.m., 7:10 between 7 a.m. and 7:10 every day, because it's even on the weekends. And so certainly subscribe to that. But also check out the social medias of Journal Sentinel for the quick hits and JR's. I remember saying that. I was like, JR would be really good at this after we had interviewed you and you'd come on this show multiple times. And lo and behold, you are.
It's fun. I'm glad we get to do it. And those newsletters are really fun too. We can kind of experiment a little bit with our voice and stuff and get people the news with their coffee and you know, give them the greatest hits before they start their day.
Absolutely. All right. Well, J.R. Radcliffe, check him out on Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for his social stories and trending sports topics. Thank you for joining us today. Kind of last minute, but we'll have you back soon.
All right. Sounds good. We'll see you then.
All right. Have a great weekend. Well, that'll do it for the noon hour. When we come back, some more debates on etiquette for the 21st century. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You've got advanced prostate cancer, but you're not waiting around. You want straight talk, the facts about Orgovyx.
Orgovyx Relugolix 120 milligram prescription tablets is a treatment for adults with advanced prostate cancer. Fact.
Orgovyx is a different kind of androgen deprivation therapy treatment, a pill, not an injection. Orgovyx may cause serious side effects, including a heart condition called QT prolongation. Tell your doctor right away if you feel dizzy, faint, have a racing or pounding heart, or chest pain. Orgovyx can cause harm to an unborn baby or miscarriage. Use birth control during treatment and for 2 weeks after Orgovyx treatment. The most common side effects include hot flushes, increased blood sugar and blood fat levels, muscle and joint pain, decreased blood hemoglobin levels, increased liver enzymes, tiredness, constipation, and diarrhea. Other side effects include weight gain, decreased sex drive, and erectile function problems. Orgovyx may cause infertility. Talk to your doctor if infertility is a concern for you.
Go with Orgovyx. Ask your doctor. For more facts, visit gowiththefacts.com.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay.